Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Today's video is brought to you by Predictable Revenue's service LinkedIn Outbound. Find out how we can leverage and grow your existing LinkedIn network to book meetings into your calendar at the link below. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Gabriel Moncayo. You might remember him from an earlier edition of the podcast or an earlier episode that we did back in April, probably came out in May 2008. So it's been 2 years. Gabriel, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Colin. Excited to be here.
Me too, man. This was a really interesting one because it's really interesting how you made your way back here. We were right in the beginning of all this COVID stuff, and one of our head of coaching actually had forwarded an email to the team to our senior group and said, "Hey, found this really interesting article on the difference between managing sort of remote SDRs and in-person SDRs." And I was like, oh, "Okay, that's really interesting." So I started reading through it, and I looked, and was like, "Oh, Gabriel, I know this guy." Finished reading the article, and I was like, "This is really, really helpful. We should get him back on the show." And so that's what we're going to talk about today. If you're listening, Gabriel's also going to share sort of three things that you need to do right if you want to stay remote and make it work and not screw it up long term. So with that said, thanks for coming on the show again. I'm curious, so where are you guys at? Just to set the tone here, where are you guys at with like remote versus in-person now? Now, and just for context, now today we were recording this, it's June 1st.
Yeah. And us as a company internally, or just our views with our partners, or what context?
Yeah, I guess you internally as a company in terms of remote versus in-person.
Yeah. So we're really heavy on the remote side. We almost went, we gave everyone the option of working from home or remote a lot as the new year started. Because we were already going towards that way from our training perspective. We were doing less in-person training and more online training. And just naturally with that, it made more sense for people to be able to work from home. So we were already in that trend, and we're just going to keep it going. And one of the things that we've learned is really important as a small startup is having really clear metrics and goals and timelines that we're constantly focused on. And what I've learned is that if you're in person, unless you have those things, it doesn't really matter. And if you do have those things, you should be able to be remote anyways. So we're going to be continuing remote first moving forward.
Gotcha. So no, there's no going back afterwards.
I don't think it makes sense. I mean, we'll probably have the option, but I don't think we'll ever force someone to come into the office to do their work in an office for no reason, like for that reason.
That's fair. We've been having that debate internally lately. And there's kind of initially there's some people that we're a team of 50, 55 people, and we had probably like a small handful, 5%. So just a few that were a little bit resistant. And I believe the majority of those people have kind of come around, but now we've reached this point that everybody that was really excited about remote work, they're almost a bit exhausted. And I've heard a number of times, and it took me a while for it to really sink in, but it's true in that what we're doing right now is not true remote distributed work, right? This is what we are all doing is social distancing in response to a pandemic. This is not this is not what real life and normal life would be like as a remote company.
Right. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, this isn't remote work at all. I'd say most people are probably working eyes open to eyes shut. I mean, and maybe they're balancing kids or family. But I think in a true remote first or work environment, that would be addressed either by the company or somehow that would be addressed. I mean, it's kind of irresponsible for an employer to have all these parents and just say, oh, well, just figure it out and you're all remote in a week. It just doesn't really make sense. And if we were remote, we'd still be able to do things outside of our homes to get that interaction we usually would get anyways, like go to the pub or go to the park or go to a birthday. And that would replace that peer interaction we used to get in the office. So this really isn't remote work. I mean, we're working remotely, but it's not remote work.
It's the same, but at the same time, it's completely different. And I totally agree with you there. It's the number of the things that we would be doing, you know, if you, let's say you give up your offices and we were spending 16 grand a month, probably total of 30 grand a month for our offices all around the world. Like that's a pretty significant chunk of change. So like, what could you do with even a fraction of that if you invested that in team building and going out to the, you know, getting everybody together for dinner and then look at the, you know, what are the high quality interactions? Like what's a higher quality interaction? You know, spending, you know, a day together, you know, once a month, once a quarter, spend a couple of days together, or have this office where, you know, you're randomly bumping into each other, which, you know, the serendipity is nice and does sort of facilitate the creative process. But I think, you know, if anything, it forces us to be more intentional. And so I am wondering, you know, for those out there that are maybe a bit skeptical, what are some reasons why you think, you know, people would want to stay remote, or why should somebody consider staying remote, or I should say going remote after this whole response to the pandemic subsides? Yeah.
And from the individual, the employee or the team member, why would they want to be remote?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think one thing that's been really tricky recently, especially in tech, has been work-life balance and the lack thereof. And I think one of the reasons that people have been fretting on work from home is because I think originally people thought it would increase work-life balance. But in reality, it's been actually the opposite, I think, which has been something we weren't expecting. We were expecting to go from an office to go to work from home to increase work-life balance. And in reality, it's been the opposite. So one of the things people should look forward to in real work from home is actual life balance, because those 2 hours of commuting is spent now with your children. Or instead of leaving the office at 5 and getting home at 6:30, you leave the office at 5, then you start cooking with your children and your family at 6:15. So we're just not really experiencing any of the perks yet of work from home, because again, we're not really in a work from home or true remote environment. We're more in crisis management right now. And I can go into, I can go into a few other reasons as well, but that's why I would start to say someone would want to work from home more.
Yeah. I mean, so maybe I'll ask the audience that can't hear me. Are you all convinced? Should we get them to give us a couple more reasons, or should we just kind of keep going? And since you're not going to actually respond to me, I'm going to say, let's give me a couple more reasons, because
I can feel it. Yeah.
I can feel that they're not quite convinced yet.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Yeah, totally. So one's the work-life balance. The second thing is the ability to get promoted. And the reason I believe work from home allows you to do that is because you take out a lot of the politics. And if you hear the number one reason people complain about corporate structure or what they don't like about what it takes to move up in a company, is the politics and the kiss ass. But if you start to take that away and you just start to truly look at performance and numbers and emails and corporate communication and attendance rates, and you take out that BS, that water cooler BS, I truly think it becomes easier to make a business case. And then it becomes harder for the boss to play favorites. So that's why I know a lot of people think it might be harder. I actually think it's going to be easier for the best people to stand out, because now it's going to be all numbers based. It's not going to be who's kissing ass the most and hiding their Excel sheet, because you can't do that remote first. So that's why I think it can be advantageous for the right kind of people.
Hmm.
Yeah,
I really like that. And because you're totally right. And I mean, we're speaking to sales teams. And so they're a little bit more inherently metric driven than, say, than potentially the rest of the organization, depending on the company that you work for. But this does kind of strip away the more opportunities for those like behind the back conversations or the hallway conversations, for good and for bad, right? We're missing the water cooler, even though we have a water cooler channel in Slack. It's just not the same. Right. And so we're finding we have to be very intentional about, it's sort of like you're pushing a rock up a hill, right? Every time with the sort of the creating the culture and the engagement, as opposed to, and like, if you let it drop, like it's not going to happen, right? You lose that sort of office presence. Whereas at the office, there was always sort of like a static level of this like inter-office communication and this and that, which kind of leads to, if you're there, oh, you know, I'm going to do X, Y, Z.
Yeah, exactly. And I would even take it a step further for a third point of why someone might like work from home. And that's because of the opportunities, and specifically financially and from a workload perspective. How many people have ever pretended to work because their boss started walking next to them? I mean, we've all done it. I've done it, right? Yeah, absolutely, right? So imagine how many times you do that per day, per week, per month. And in theory, you're doing that as a sales rep because you're still productive. You're still hitting your quota. You won't be there, but you want to look busy in front of the boss. So now imagine you can still hit your quota, but you take out all the time where you need to look busy. That means you're either going to make more money with that time that you're being productive, or you're just going to have better balance and you're going to have less BS and you're going to stop complaining with your friends about how much of a joke your boss is. And I think that creates a real opportunity for sales reps and sales teams to make more income, again, have better quality of life, work less hard because it's about the metrics and I was teasing when I say like make fun of their boss.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. And it's interesting. I've done the same both as the, like when my boss is walking by, you sort of alt tab to or command tab, depending on what kind of computer you're using, sure. Back to like Salesforce. I'm like, oh, just updating something here. But I found myself doing that where I was doing something when like in the last couple of years where I am the boss, right? Like I'm the CEO over here and I'm noodling on something else and it's just an idea. And I might be looking at a video on YouTube to try and figure something out or this or that. And I would flip back to like, oh, my email, oh, my, you know, my to-do list when somebody's working. Cause I wanted to set a good tone and like not let them like look over and think that the boss is slacking off. Right. And so I don't think it's isolated to just like people not wanting to look bad in front of their boss. I think it's people not wanting to look bad in front of others.
Great point.
Right. I think you're totally right. One of the things that I've enjoyed most about this is that sort of that freedom. Though now I don't want to look like a slacker in front of my wife. So like there's the balance there. but you know, like I went for a run this morning. And like I just decided, 3 days a week, like the running is important. And that's something that, that if I don't take care of my physical health, that my performance suffers. And so, I used to get that from my commute. I would run into the office. We happened to be like almost exactly 10K from our office. And so that was really nice. I could get, my 30, 40K in every week just in my commute, which was amazing. Had some complexities with like showering at work and this and that. We had some showers, but I had to be more intentional about building that into my calendar now that we're remote, right? We almost need to realize it's a new job, right? Like working from home is like having the same job, but you're working for a different company and you have to reestablish some of those really healthy habits that you had before.
So true. Yeah. So, I had to redo my whole morning routine everyone had to redo their whole routine. So totally couldn't agree more.
So tell me I'm curious personally, what did you redo? In light of COVID, like in terms of your morning routine, your end routine, and then how do we get this right as an organization?
Yeah, so I used to do a couple of things similar on my commute also. One would be I'd listen to like a self-help book or a coaching book or a startup book on a podcast or something like that. And I noticed when we shifted to shelter in place, I didn't have that commute anymore, that half an hour I was walking to the office or commuting in, and I stopped listening to all these books. And I noticed myself after a month falling into some bad habits, like old habits, and not being like super conscious of my thoughts and my actions. And I'm like, wait, didn't I learn how to break this already? And I realized that it's because I wasn't doing my new routine that I had implemented to help my mind stay super sharp. And I basically just had to then add times to my calendar where I couldn't get blocked for meetings or anything else. And now that doesn't happen necessarily just in the morning through my commute time. Cause now what I realize is I wake up, I go straight to my email for a little bit. I make sure there's no fires and then I kind of do my day and then I get back. But like you said, I've just had to force it into my calendar. And I've had to do that with reading. I've had to do that with my workout schedule. So it was pretty rough for the first few weeks. And then I think everything kind of hit me at once and I realized, I got to get the routine back somehow. So I don't know if that's too vague, but that's how I handled it.
Yeah, I totally get that. And not too vague without going into like minute by minute detail, but I think it's just a good reminder that all of those habits that you built up, they take time to establish, and we're kind of like floating in space. And so, now is the time that it seems like, there's going to be a lot of us where either this, the response to the pandemic is not permanent, but is going to stick around for more than a couple of months. And so here's, if you're listening, here's your reminder to think about, and maybe hit me up in the comments or throw me a message on LinkedIn and let me know what habits from your pre-COVID days are you working to reestablish now? And just, think about that and think about like, what do we need to do moving forward? So if I zoom us out a little bit, how do we get this right organizationally, right? There's a couple things we've talked about, being a little bit more intentional, but we promised the three things that you really need to nail. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about those?
Yeah, sure. I can start maybe with a high level and then we can drill deeper into them.
Let's do it.
All right, cool. So high level, there's three things that are really going to help anyone be successful in this environment. Those three things are Number one, culture is going to be the most important thing. Number two, it's going to be goal setting. And number three, it's going to be the relationships you manage to build in this remote environment. So should I start bringing them down?
Yeah, let's dive into culture first. So we'll do culture, goal setting, relationship building, and then we can go from there.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so the biggest thing with culture is that typically in a culture you have especially in sales, you have a what have you done for me lately kind of attitude. And we all know in sales, as soon as that month turns over or the quarter or the year, whatever system you're on, you're back to a zero. And it's a very unique position to be in, especially in the business world, where you don't get a ton of credit for your previous successes. A lot of other people do. Like you go to a product manager, like they're the person that launched the Facebook button, or they're the person that launched this website. You never hear of a sales rep that like, they're the one that hit quota 2 years ago. It's a very different world. So yeah.
That person that hit the quota 2 years ago, they work for a different company now because they didn't hit quota last year.
Exactly. Right. So totally, totally different world. And the thing that we need to be taking into consideration with culture is really what is the most important. So the most important thing in a sales culture is urgency to hit targets at the end of the day, right? I mean, especially in this remote first environment where we're not seeing people eye to eye every day necessarily, or face to face, however we want to call it. It's important that there's trust, and trust in sales is usually built on performance, which is what's beautiful and painful about sales. So there has to be a way to still instill urgency when you're not with anyone. Because usually urgency is like a team thing that you build. You're hoorahing everyone, right? It's like a huddle. The next thing is to have, is this a good way? Colin, I should just go, I'm going to go into them and then you can ask me to go deeper if you want.
Yeah,
or do you want me to slow me down there?
Yeah. Maybe let's slow down for a minute here because I'm curious on the culture and let's drive in. So what you're saying is it's accountability to the results, and the sort of urgency to own the quota, so to speak. I'm curious because I know you're on your business is a little bit on the people side of things. How have you guys have you adjusted your quotas at all for the reps, or have you kept them same?
Us personally, we haven't adjusted them. But I know there's a lot of surveys out there where people have adjusted them, haven't adjusted them. But we haven't seen the need to right now.
So. Interesting. So in terms of the forecasts, it's business as usual a little bit? Like, or is your attainment going to go down?
It will probably go down a little bit. Yeah, it's probably going to go down a little bit. But we're not going to necessarily pull the reps quota down. But if the rep misses the quota, we'll probably be more understanding than we usually are. So
gotcha.
I don't know if that's me saying we did change the quota, we didn't, because that's not that normal for sales. But like, we're trying to take care of the company and take care of the team.
You know? It's a really interesting one. Is you never want to take your foot off the gas, or like you want your sales team totally geared for, okay, we've got to hit quota no matter what, all the time. But I think there've been some businesses, and I'm happy that, that you guys weren't one of them, where, you know, you watch your industry, sort of disappear overnight. And all of a sudden everybody used to sell to, you know, they're closing up shop there. They don't have any customers. And so, you know, I really feel for those companies that, and those sales teams where their market, their ICP has just sort of disappeared or is really hurting right now. But I'm very fortunate. I'm happy that, you guys aren't in that situation.
Thanks. Yeah, we've definitely been lucky there to be a COVID beneficiary, as we call it. So,
ooh, there you go. And so the conversation kind of leads naturally into, you know, if you're creating this culture of accountability around goals, talk to me about how you guys handle goal setting on a remote basis. How does this change?
Yeah, so one of the things that changes is just, and this is I've noticed from every level, the crisis has forced us to make tough decisions sooner, and it's forced us to make decisions we probably knew we should make. We just were hesitant to make them. Basically the same thing I said. So for example, studies have come out that when you do spiffs to reward salespeople on cash, they're not as effective as when you do spiffs based on stories or gifts they can hold on to. So for example, they did like 100 sales reps, one 100 sales reps, another. One group got a $100 bonus for hitting a commission. The other group was told they would get a pizza party for their family. Everything would be paid for. The group that said they'd had the pizza party for the family actually ended up costing the company less per spiff, but produced higher results because the individual is more motivated to take care of their family than to get just $100 extra. And what we're noticing now is that in this environment, MOOCs like massive open, what's the MOOC? Massive open,
online courses. There you go.
Yeah. Just a brain fart there. those numbers are going through the roof right now in terms of usage. And that's because people want to level up. So what we need to do is we need to bridge the gap. We need to give people rewards and spiffs that enable them to level up. So whether that's a free coupon code to a course, whether that's an online seminar, whatever your team member considers personal development, that's what they want right now through this chaos. And that's what our incentives need to be aligned to beyond just base and commission, which I would consider table stakes at this point. I mean, good sales teams go way above just base and commission. So that's really the last part. It's competition with a focus on personal development specifically. Hmm.
Interesting. And so tell me more. So like on a, how do you manage that on say like a, like I imagine there's like a quarterly, monthly, and sort of a week to week kind of perspective on this. What's your strategy for like tying those three together?
Yeah. So it usually depends on the KPIs of the company. So, you know, you have small business, mid-market, enterprise, you have a 3-day cycle, 3-week cycle, 3-month cycle, however you want to define it. And then based on that, you'll have different adjustments. But generally speaking, you need to match up the spiff with the KPI and the length expected. So for this is just an example. If you're going to target calls, you want to improve calls. Well, calls is probably something you don't want to be tracking over a monthly basis for your spiff, because that's such a high part of your funnel that it goes so quickly that you can make that a 1 or 2 day spiff when you need a lift. But let's say you're tracking demo show rates, not even demos booked, just the percentage that show, that naturally takes a week or two to carry over, right? Before you actually get to see the full data. So depending on what you're targeting in the sales cycle in terms of an improvement point, that's going to define if you want to run the spiff on a daily, weekly, quarterly, monthly, or quarterly. So that's why like a quota spiff might be monthly. A call spiff might be daily. Gotcha. A demo spiff might be weekly, as examples.
Okay. So you're just sort of aligning it with the, I guess, the time scale of the activity that you're looking at.
Yeah.
And then you're using the spiffs to sort of, I guess, when you're noticing gaps or holes, like, I guess, when do you decide to use a spiff for like calls versus demos versus like activity versus outcomes?
Yeah. So it's really based on what metric is underperforming. So in theory, spiff budget should just be built into all sales plans. And then sales plans should have baked in assumptions, 100 calls, 15 decision makers, 5 meetings, 2 deals, right? And then depending on what conversion is below expectation, you can just attach a spiff to that. So your spiff should just be specifically tied to your underperforming metric, and then that should fix the metric. And then you just keep playing that game with your team.
Gotcha. I'm curious, the people that are listening, like what are your favorite sort of non-monetary spiffs that you've received? It was the first episode I ever recorded, but it wasn't the first episode that we published because they got mixed up, but it was with Zach Barney and he went through some, you know, non-monetary spiffs. And one was like for every call made or for every, he had a fairly large team and I can't remember if it was call made or demo booked or whatever it was. He would do a push up. And the team, nice. It must've been calls made and it was in like a couple of day period and it was a small team. But they ended up making him do like 1100 pushups.
I was going to say, dude, calls, he must've done so many.
Yeah. It was right around 1000 pushups. And he's got like a video of him doing 1000 pushups. I'm thinking like, and he did it in a day. Like if you said do 1000 pushups in a day, I'd still be in that day. Like it would have taken me a very long time.
I know, right? You know, yeah. David Goggins, like the military guy I was going to say, who was the sales manager? David Goggins doing 1000 pushups in a day.
Totally, it definitely sounds like Goggins for sure. Yeah. The other one he did was like for every demo or customer meeting of a certain type for a certain product booked, because they were trying to encourage, hey, like we want to really boost, you know, we're behind on, you know, meeting setting for this side of the company. If you book one, you can pie me.
Oh, nice. I've done a pie.
You've done that before?
Yeah. I have a Instagram video of me. We hit a sales target for the floor.
Nice.
Straight pie in the face. They loved it. So yeah, so I can share a few non-monetary if you want.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. So the biggest thing I noticed is people like stories. So we got to go with stories, right? The pizza example is the story of them taking care of their family. So a couple good ways to do this. Number one, attach it to current events, including calendars or holidays or anything like that. So anytime you have a holiday and you want to say, hey, I want to pay for the top rep's barbecue, or I want to pay for an extra Christmas gift, or whatever kind of story you can paint around the holiday, that's a great way to do a non-monetary spiff. And then it almost doesn't matter what you give them for that, right? As long as you're making it about a holiday. So that's one thing. Just attach it to a holiday, okay? Second thing you can do is people love being at work but not working. It's probably like people's pastime, right?
Yeah.
So if you can find a spiff where it allows people to do something fun during work hours, assuming productivity is already hit, that's a huge moral boost. So for example, end of the month, if we get this number, or end of the week, or before the 3-day weekend, we're going to spend Friday afternoon, what people used to do, is at the park, or we're all going to see the movie theater. Iron Man 3 is coming out. We're all going to see the matinee Friday, the entire sales team. So that's something that can be fun. It can be hard in this kind of shelter in place, but some good ideas could be like a virtual comedy session. Comedians aren't even that expensive. So you can wrangle up 2 or 3 comedians. They spend an hour total. You do a Zoom meeting during office hours. And that would be so fun for the sales team, right? So,
damn, great idea.
Yeah, things like that are really going to pump people up beyond like a $200 spiff.
Have you done the comedian one?
Not with all 3 people for an hour, but I have had someone pop in and it was so good that it gave me the idea to make it a whole thing.
Hmm. Cool. I really like that idea actually.
Yeah.
Sweet. And so, cause it's not just like coming back to it, right? It starts with the culture of making sure that we're maintaining that and being intentional about maintaining that. And like the culture of like, let's hit that, you know, whether it's let's hit that quota or let's hit our goal if you're in sales or, you know, whatever else it could be outside of sales. And then I love how you're focusing on being really intentional in the goal setting piece. One of the things that I think with the absence of the office is the absence of the serendipitous, you know, moments is that connection. So talk to me about how you make sure you maintain the relationship building side of the office without an office.
Yeah. It's really tough and it's really important because salespeople already complain and maybe rightfully so. I'm not sure if complaints are the right word. They'll already voice that they feel like a number. Right. And it's kind of, that's all kind of salespeople are talked to, right? It's like, hey, hit your quota or you're gone. But if you do hit your quota, here's this amazing, you know, carrot that you can have. So it's kind of really thrown in salespeople's faces. So it's already aggressive. And then what happens when you take that personal interaction away and it's just a voice telling you hit your quota or you're fired, right? And you've never actually seen them or interacted with them or seen they have a bad hair day or a good, or they bought a shirt or they're stressed out on a Monday because of family. Like you just don't see that, right? So naturally it creates more divide in a business unit that already has division because there's so much turnover and pressure. So what we need to realize is that we need to figure out ways to intentionally create that relationship. So one example would be I've had to train myself, and I'm sorry to anyone who now is like, oh, Gabe, I didn't realize that was your system. I've had to train myself to start Zoom calls with personal conversations. Because if not, I just don't talk to my team like that. And like some people on my team are okay with that and some just aren't. They're not okay with me just being business. So let's say I have a 30-minute meeting. I literally have it scheduled into my personal agenda, 5 minutes of just catching up on your life. And I'm not going to move on to a business topic until I get something out of you. So you got to be really intentional with how you structure your communication so that they know you're trying to build a relationship. And unless it almost feels so, I don't know if force is the right word, but unless it feels like they can tell you're trying that hard, you're probably not trying hard enough because we don't really know what hard enough is in this unprecedented environment of only building relationships on Zoom, right? Totally. So I'll kind of pause there, but those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I love that you're opening the conversations with the personal thing. I've got a, and I don't remember where I stole it from. One of the things I always struggled with trying to figure out was one-on-ones. There's so many different formats. I had never had, I'd never been the recipient of a really strong one-on-one or even a one-on-one in any of my previous roles before I started my own thing. And so I had no baseline to go off of when it was, you know, if I was meeting with my boss, it was because I was either smashing quota or missing quota. And either way, you're like, oh, what's going on? You know, there was none of this like regular check-in. And I don't want to be one of those like old people who's like, oh, back in my day, because I'm not that old. Just I had no baseline. And so it's one of the things I've really spent a lot of time trying to figure out. And I don't remember where I'm stealing this from, but somebody, some book, it might've been EOS, it might've been Scaling Up, Rockefeller Habits. It might've been like Patty McCord's book on Netflix. But anyway, the format was very similar to what you do. It's like, how are you doing personally? How are you doing professionally? How's your team? How are you doing with against your number? How are you feeling about your number? And then what are you working on this week? And it's like, those are the five things that I ask every single one-on-one. And then everything else is just their agenda. But I ask with every one of my one-on-ones, and I always start with personal. Right. And sometimes if personal takes up 100% of it, that's fine because we're right. people, right?
Right? Yeah, it's a great point. That's oftentimes the only way to save a rep. And we sometimes don't even realize it. It's just all we see is the Excel number, especially in remote. And we're like, why is this person struggling? They've been so good. And you just can't figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then you talk to them and they just went through like a traumatic life experience or something is going on. And they just end up like venting for 20 minutes. And if you give them that safe space, they're usually going to be receptive. Not always, but yeah, couldn't agree with you more. Especially when we're talking to salespeople. I mean, how stressed out must they be worrying about their quota, especially in this market, dude, to have a quota on your head. I mean, they must be dealing with a lot of stress.
Yeah. It's an intense time for all of us for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm curious on the, like we've covered kind of three things that if you want to stay remote, what you need to do. I'm curious, like anything else, if we're thinking about the difference between like remote and like hiring, managing, coaching remote versus in-person SDRs or salespeople in general.
Yeah. Managing and coaching specifically.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So one of the things I've noticed is difficult is the live call feedback, because before you can just kind of listen to what your reps are doing and you're like, well, why did you answer that to price? That's not how we say answer price or whatever it is. You don't have that at all. And you can look at the data to see where someone's struggling, like, oh, their gatekeeper to DM conversion rate is bad. There's something wrong. Let's listen to their calls. But it still creates a delay system where you've gone from real-time feedback to maybe daily to probably weekly, especially if you're just listening to recorded calls or something.
If you're lucky, right, to even catch that.
Yeah, if you're lucky, right? So that's been a huge problem. I noticed that working with our sales team, and we've had to fix it. So there's a couple things that we've had to do. Number one, we do morning powwows where people do practice pitches and warm up. And then we still do live call sessions where it's basically one of us are like on a Zoom on speakerphone and the other person is just calling. Hmm. And we're just on mute. Maybe we're giving notes on Slack to coach. Maybe we're just kind of listening idly. But yeah, we're doing like a Zoom like this where the other person's calling. And then we bring people in to hear, like our team members, right? Or other students or whatever it is. So those are some of the things that I think are really, really important from a tactical perspective, is making sure you still have a way to listen to the calls they're making. It should probably be daily. I mean, it depends what their activities are, but it needs to be at least weekly. And I doubt most people are doing it weekly.
Out of curiosity, because we do the same thing. We flip it and we say, hey, rep, bring me your worst call or your worst call attempt. And then we can work on that. Like, don't bring me your good ones. Bring me the ones where you're like, I don't know what happened here. Or just, you know, I thought I should have made the progression. How do you guys handle like the calls? Are you specifically choosing it's this one that I want to listen to? Or are you having them come to you with calls?
We're generally having them come to us with calls in that scenario. Other scenarios, they're just making live calls. So they don't really get the cherry pick, which I really like. But we also do weekly sessions where we listen to specific recorded calls. In that scenario, honestly, personally, I don't even care if they give me a laydown. Because usually on a recorded laydown, they're still going to do 10 things wrong. It's just that the deal was a laydown. It's not that they closed it into a laydown. Deals don't close into a laydown. Deals, laydowns get put on sales reps' desks, right? So even in that, I still find there's typically a lot of good coaching moments. So that's why I don't force them to say, give me a bad call or a call that didn't go anywhere. Because sometimes then they'll just bring a call and the guy's like, or the woman's like, not interested, bye, and they hang up. And it's like, well, what could you have said really anyways if they hung up in the first 20 seconds, right? Maybe it was your tone, but so that's how we handle that.
Cool. Gabe, I really appreciate you coming on here and expanding. As part of in the show notes, what you can, if you're curious, we've got the whole, we'll post a link to Gabe's blog post that I originally found or that was originally forwarded to me. I won't give you the forwarded email copy and paste. We'll actually send the proper link. But if you're curious about checking those points out, head up. Have a look in the show notes and we'll throw that there. Really appreciate you coming on the show, Gabe. Like to give everybody a chance to promote themselves. So let's jump to the cold call.
Sure.
So set the tone, set the context for me. What's your, talk to me about your ideal customer profile and like what job title do I have? What kind of company do I work for?
Yeah, typically you'll be a VP of sales, maybe an HR, depending how large the company is. The larger the company, HR is going to own the headcount. The smaller the company, the VP of sales is going to own the headcount. We help companies hire SDRs, really. So we don't really do the outsourcing thing. So just for companies that want to hire the SDR. So that's what we go after. Company hiring SDR, usually VP of sales, maybe HR leader if the company is big enough, nationwide, anywhere in the country. Yeah, that's our ideal customer profile.
Cool. All right. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin. I was... looking on your Glassdoor page, and I noticed you had an SDR job posting open. Are you still filling for that role?
We are.
You are, nice. You're taking applications then?
Yep.
Oh, cool. It looks like having Salesforce experience, cold calling experience, and the ability to generate meetings are the core requirements for the role. Is that accurate?
Yep. Yeah. Are you applying for the role?
I'm not applying for the role. No, I'm not. But I did have a lot of people with Salesforce experience, cold calling experience, and the ability to generate meetings for enterprise companies like yours that would love to work at Oracle. Would you be open to meeting those types of candidates?
Are you a recruiter?
Kind of, sort of. So what we do is we have a lot of students that we work with that want to break into sales. They actually pay us to go through a sales training program for 4 weeks. And then after they're done learning how to use Salesforce, they've booked a few meetings, they learn how to work for a tech org, then we match them with companies like you that are hiring that need sales reps to book demos.
Cool.
Does that sound like someone that might be able to have some success in your org?
Sounds super interesting.
Great. 30-second demo booked.
Congrats, man. Great call. I like how you just opened with the pain. It's like, hey, I saw on Glassdoor that you're doing this. It's not like, hey, this is Colin from blah, 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 blah. It was all about me from the get-go.
Yeah. I mean, you probably don't care about me at all, right?
I mean, I've known you a couple of times and I still don't. So if you call me. Yeah. If people love the article and they want to find out more about this Always Hired program that you guys are running for placing SDRs, if they're an SDR listening or if they're somebody that hires SDRs, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Yeah, our website's alwayshired.com. And I'm also really active on social media. My handle is typically at Gabe Moncayo.
Perfect. And that's C-A-Y-O, not C-A-I-O-O-O-O-O, like I've got it written out phonetically in my show notes here.
I know. Many people say Moncayo, so no big deal. It's Moncayo. So yeah.
Moncayo. Awesome. Well, Gabe, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Right on. And we'll see you all next week. All right. Shout out to Predictable Revenues, Service LinkedIn Outbound, Service for sponsoring this video. As a founder and sales leader myself, I know most of the best practices in terms of like what I need to be doing on LinkedIn, but sometimes I just don't have the time. You know what the right things to do are, but it comes down to a trade-off of where's my time better spent? And can I find somebody to click around on LinkedIn for me and book meetings, you know, and then I can focus on higher level activities. And so think about it. What's the best use of your time? If you're a founder, sales leader, and you have a team, you need some meetings, I'd encourage you to check it out. I'm using it myself. I'm obviously the founder, so eating our own dog food. But if you're curious, click the link below to learn more.